thank you for this late edition of, thank you for joining us for this late edition of Hashtag No Limits. We are starting a little bit late today because my guest is not in his normal location. And so he had to arrange some things in order to be with me today. So I'm very appreciative of that. This is Hashtag No Limits, and Hashtag No Limits is about people who society places limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true, and that there isn't a better example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly, and then has to struggle in order for its wings to be strong enough for it to fly, in order for it to get out of the cocoon. That was kind of all jumbled up in there, but you all get what I'm trying to say today. So Matt, thank you so much for joining me from this different location. How are you today?
Shelley, thank you for having me. I'm great. Greetings from Boston.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm appreciative of you being here. And I am so stoked about learning that. I just dated myself by using that word, but about learning about this app that you have created called Frenalytics. So please just jump right in and start telling us kind of, you know, how it came to be, and we'll go from there.
Absolutely. Again, thanks for having me on the show. Frenalytics is a personalized learning and data collection software designed not only for patients of stroke, dementia, and related diagnoses who may have a brain injury, but for exactly what we're here on the show today to discuss, Shelley, students who have a variety of different learning differences and disabilities, including autism and Down syndrome, but also for the parents and for the teachers and those in the school system who support them. That endeavor coming into the world of education and special education is fairly recent for us. That was something as a result of the COVID pandemic we fairly recently ventured into. But our story goes way back to when I was 12 years old. I've been working on this for more than half my life. We have a bit of a sad founding story, but as I like to say to people, this is kind of like turning lemons into lemonade. And so I kind of think of it from that vantage point instead of merely focusing on just the sad beginnings of where we are today. My grandmother suffered a really bad stroke when she was undergoing open heart surgery. And I was 12 years old when this was all occurring. I was a seventh grader in middle school. And back in 2008, when she had her stroke, just to set the scene for the technology that was available, the iPhone just came out 1 year prior. And so touchscreen computers were all the rave. And the iPad did not even exist yet. And so it goes to show you that while there was a lot available physically to help people like my grandmother with their rehabilitation, there wasn't a lot available yet for cognitive rehabilitation. And unfortunately, 13, 14 years later, not much has changed. When she was in the hospitals in New York, where I was growing up, she was being treated by top PT, OT, and speech therapists. And they were using flashcards, really similar to the ones that special education teachers use for their students in early, middle, and high school to try and teach them concepts for the first time. And while my grandmother was paralyzed in the right side of her body and had irreversible brain damage on the left side of her brain and really needed to relearn a lot of cognitive skills that are fundamental for her activities of daily living, she was with it enough to realize that she was being patronized by these flashcards and she didn't want anything to do with them. And I'm sure students don't like flashcards when they see them in the elementary school setting either. But as someone in her late 70s, she realized that the flashcards were just not meant for her. And as a result, the really one way and basic skills that they were attempting to teach just wasn't getting through to her at all. And so what I tried to do at the time was reinvent the wheel, so to speak, and create a version of this cognitive therapy for her that I hoped would resonate with her a little bit better. And that was the original birth of Frenalytics. It started as a PowerPoint program because I was a middle school student. I didn't know how to code at the time, but I did know how PowerPoint worked. And so I created an interactive multiple choice game for her through PowerPoint. And the slides would switch through and ask her different questions about her life, her growing up, her family members, and the things that mattered the most to her. And not only was it all about her and it was fun and engaging and something that she wanted to participate in, but it had background colors and silly sound effects and this over-the-top award ceremony at the end, kind of like the Olympics. And it just celebrated her and the little accomplishments that she was able to achieve as a result of going through this cognitive therapy game. And one thing led to another. I made 4 different versions of this program. And before I knew it, I realized that not only was she more interested in it, but she was showing meaningful signs of improvement through the use of the software as well. And it was something that we knew we had to turn into the hands of more patients and more students, as well as those who care for them. And that's how we turned it into what's now known today as Frenalytics.
That's incredible. So 12 years old, I think when I was 12 and when my own child was 12, you know, developing programs like what you're talking about were not on our radar. So kudos to you at 12 for recognizing and thinking about, hey, I could do something about this. I might be able to come up with something. So I just want to talk a little bit more about that particular part of it. Okay, so like how long did this take you? And were you just like stuck in a corner doing this for your grandmother while all your peers were out doing whatever else? Or like kind of tell me about the evolving of this.
Absolutely. It didn't take long for me to recognize that she was not showing the signs of improvement that she so desperately needed to achieve while she was kind of in the most severe states post-stroke, especially when it came to her cognitive care. So I was watching the flashcards happen, and I knew that there had to be some sort of better way that needed to be developed ASAP. And even though she was in these top hospitals, there wasn't anything innovative that was being presented to her. And so the options were kind of stay status quo and stay stagnant, or kind of take matters into your own hands. And I think it was within a couple of weeks, I created the first version of what was called Grandma's Ultimate Challenge. And all these silly questions like, what was your home address? And which one of these is your son? Which one of these is your daughter? Which one of these is your pet Noel? And we were able to ask different questions to her that she just immediately lit up and really enjoyed, compared to the clip art images of a random dog or a stick figure of a random boy or a random girl. That was the expectation, that she was going to relearn familial relationships through clip art images and relearn areas of her home and people in her family through clip art. And that just was not going to happen. So it didn't take long for me to realize that, hey, maybe there's this other way that could be created and let's try it out. And as soon as I realized there was an interest and that there were early successes, that's what inspired us to continue going with me creating the initial versions of this game for her. And then for us as a collective group turned company to turn this into software that others can use as well.
So what are your parents thinking about you at this point in your life? Like, I mean, I'm just, this is so fascinating to me because I'm thinking, you know, if this was myself and if my daughter, you know, had opportunity to do this, you know, like, did you have experience? Like, what did your parents do at the time, like for jobs? I mean, I'm just trying to wrap my head around how you even thought about the fact that this was something that needed to be done. I mean, that just blows my mind at 12 that you could have, that you saw that like, well, this isn't working. And you have, like you said, all these experts doing all these great things with her, the things of the time, so to speak. And then for you to go, well, I know PowerPoint. I mean, okay, I'm really going to date myself. PowerPoint wasn't even a thing when I was in junior high or high school, maybe not even early college years. So like, how did you just know this stuff? And like, do you have any idea what sort of gave you that drive or gave you that direction to go do this?
I still think about it and giggle a little bit myself. I mean, I was always very, very, very interested. Some might say obsessed with computers and technology. Even since I was a little kid, I was using computers since before I could talk. And so okay. I was always really interested in creating new things, whether it was on paper from computers or, you know, I guess things that would be represented or considered software on computer, even if it wasn't like actual code, it would be a PowerPoint program or a Word document as a website, whatever it might be. So I think it ran through my blood, this kind of, you know, itch for technology. And then coupled with my love for entrepreneurship, I think I actually get that from my family. My father is a practicing psychiatrist and he has extensive background in neurology. He also has firsthand experience with strokes as well. He had a series of mini strokes a few years ago. Wow. So sadly, he has lived through that as well. But fortunately, it was not nearly as severe as my grandmother's. And while we now get to work on this company together. He's one of my co-founders. We get to use that firsthand experience and say, hey, this is a product that you very well could have been using because you had to go through cognitive therapy to an extent when you were going through your recovery process. And now it's that much more meaningful. On my mom's side, my mother is a pediatric nurse. She founded her own home care agency 22 years ago. And so I think that entrepreneurial bug runs through her and jumped right over and landed on me. Her father, my grandfather, founded a computer company back in its heyday. And so I think that there's a real lineage there and a love for entrepreneurship that I certainly picked up on. And even when I was young, you know, I really wanted to be a doctor for a certain period of time. And then that quickly transitioned to me wanting to become a teacher. And then neither one of those quite happened, but I had to find a scenario in which I could found a company that has the ability to bring the best of both worlds together.
And absolutely. So it's a
technology company that serves the use case of both of those professions and the patients and the students that they serve.
Okay, so now that makes a little more sense to me now that you've explained your home life, because you've got a neurologist or a psychologist with some neurology background. You've got a mom who's got the nursing. You've got a grandfather who's got the computer. So now I can kind of go, oh, okay, he didn't just totally come up with this completely out of the blue. There was probably some discussion in your lifetime, whether or not you were totally involved in it and engaged in it about, you know, oh, this is how the brain works. And oh, this is, you know, how a computer works and, you know, the medical side of things. So thank you for that. I feel a little more understanding of kind of, I'm a very much process and detail person. So I really appreciate you going into that for me. So what was your grandmother's reaction when you brought Grandma's Ultimate Challenge to her?
I think that she was intrigued. I mean, as a woman in her late 70s at the time, most would probably put her kind of in this bucket of not knowing technology much. But mm-hmm. in her heyday, prior to her stroke, she loved using the computer. She would make slideshows of family vacations. She would illegally download music and movies and burn DVDs for us. And so she just she knew computers more than some of my own family and friends did. And I'm not quite sure where she got that bug from, but she really loved technology and she used computers and embraced it. So that was one of the things that I leaned into after I realized she had a stroke, seeing if I could bring that interest of hers kind of back to life just in a different way. And I think by creating a program that was designed for her and kind of actively prompted her to engage with it, she leaned into that. And you could tell that it was a combination of her prior love and experience using a computer, coupled with questions cognitively that intrigued her and piqued her interest, kind of yielding this outcome of helping her feel and get better that allowed us to motivate her to continue. It was kind of synergistic. It was really heartwarming and inspiring to see. And I think that while, you know, she was really cognitively impaired and may not have necessarily come to that conclusion on her own, us being able to help her come to that conclusion and realize that this is really helping her made her want to continue partaking in it as well. Because as we saw with the flashcards, she knew enough to know that what she liked and didn't like, and she did not like the flashcards and she didn't do them. Whereas she enjoyed this version of therapy. And so she would continue over and over to participate in it, which was really comforting and heartwarming to see.
Yeah. So I know some about PowerPoint, but I don't probably know enough to really grasp the concept of what it looked like at the beginning.
Sure.
So if she would do it over and over again, which you said she was, mm-hmm. did she have different graphics each time, or was it always just the same each time she went through it? Like, here's a picture of your son, here's a picture of your daughter, which one's your daughter?
Right. So the way that I set up each version of the game was that they were multiple choice questions and there were typically 10 per session. As she became more advanced in her cognitive therapy recovery, I became more advanced with, one, my PowerPoint skills, but two, the way that I would prepare the sessions. And so the first ever version was 10 questions, just get to the end, and that's kind of the celebration. There'd be three answer choices typically, and she would have to choose which one she thought was right. If she chose the right answer, the screen would light up. She'd move to the next question. By version 2 and by version 3, there would be different difficulty levels, and she would be able to choose which difficulty she wanted to kind of go through that day. And so it would adapt based on that kind of the kind of modification, so to speak, or kind of scaffolding, you know, if you wanted to describe it that way. By versions 3 and version 4, there were different paths that she can take. So there was like an easy that she can complete, a medium that she can complete, a hard that she can complete. And then there were different areas that she'd be able to go through as well, where this was a math-based one, this was an areas of your life-based one, this was a reading-based one, this was a let's practice a phone conversation-based one. And so she was able to choose which one she wanted to go through. So it kind of led her to choose like the path that she wanted to go down for that particular session. So not every session was exactly the same.
Okay. So did you develop all of those yourself, or did your grandfather or your father jump in once they saw what you had done in the first version and saw some potential in it? This was totally you though.
I developed all of them myself. Yeah. I showed my family after the first version came together, and they kind of gave me a pat on the back. They're like, you know, good for you. Like, this is great. But I don't think they really saw the same potential that I did, not only in the software itself, because I wasn't thinking about it for that purpose at the time, but more so the potential in what my grandma was capable of. And as we did it as a group in the hospital, they then realized what her response was and then her level of improvement from it. And I think that's what motivated all of us to keep going with it. And that's when I was able to make use of my family's different laptops, and we'd bring them into the hospital and do them with her. I'd get different songs downloaded from the internet, and it became a bit more of a family involvement by that point, because I would need to learn about, you know, Frank Sinatra songs that she used to like in her heyday, and areas of her upbringing that I just didn't know the answers to necessarily. So it became a bit more of a family involvement for that matter. But in terms of what I thought would be appropriate to ask her, that's like, it was a little bit of a trial and error. It was a bit of an experiment, but I came up with that. And I think that, you know, perhaps I was onto something a bit ahead of my time, but I think that's what really piqued my dad's interest, perhaps, especially because he knew that there was a process here that the program was following that was helping her kind of reinvigorate certain aspects of her memory that otherwise she wouldn't be able to tap into.
Yeah, I would say more than perhaps you were ahead of the time. You were definitely ahead of the curveball there. I'm just so fascinated by your story, and I definitely want to get into the whole, you know, what it does and you know, some more examples now that it's beyond the PowerPoint part of it. But so how much time, you know, because I know some people who have had strokes and they're years down the road and they are not anywhere close to, you know, what they were before they had their stroke. So how much time did you work on this with your grandma, like per week compared to, and I know I'm jumping ahead with this question, but compared to, you know, maybe what you're doing with the app now.
Right. So she had her stroke in September of 2008. By the end of 2008, I believe I came out with 3 of the 4 versions in PowerPoint. And I think the 4th version came out in early 2009, if I can remember the timeline correctly. So that goes to show you like just how quickly, you know, version 1 came about, and then versions 2 and 3 followed. And then, you know, when version 4 came out, that was kind of the most sophisticated of the bunch. We realized that there was, you know, quite a bit of material here for her to work with. And that then yielded the thought process amongst my family and a family friend who then entered the picture for business purposes and says, hey, you know, we're working on this model of personalized cognitive therapy. How do we bring this, you know, to the masses? How do we bring this to other people who've had stroke, dementia, and TBI? And then how do we bring it into the school system for students with various learning disabilities? That kind of is where that light bulb moment went off. But going back to the software itself, you know, I think we ran it during every visit that I made with her to the various hospitals and stroke centers that she was a part of. And back in the day, she was able to stay in those centers for far longer under insurance than you can nowadays. Insurance will, like, you know, in and out the door within a week or two. She was in the hospital and different stroke centers for about 4 months. So she made it until the end of 2008 before she was discharged and had 24/7 care in her home. She was fortunate enough to have that care given to her, and then we would visit her at her house instead of the hospital.
And so how much progress was she making, you know, per week or per month? Or I mean, I'm guessing that you had the data, or was it just like, no, we can just tell that she's doing this differently now?
It kind of takes place in both aspects, I would say, Shelley. The first is, you know, your former, what you just described of data-wise, you can tell based on how quickly she was answering questions as time went on, even if it was the same questions, she wouldn't necessarily remember that the same questions were being asked of her, but there was a confidence level being built. There was a level of memory that was being reinstated, both short-term and long-term. There was an aphasia, a difficulty with speaking that was being overcome, and she was able to communicate needs and desires, but also answers to questions of ours verbally more fluidly than she used to be able to. And so you can tell from those kind of data points that things were getting better over time, not exclusively from the software, of course, but you can tell that it was a contributing factor. And then the second was, as she was running the game, you can tell that there was not only an interest, but that there was kind of this upswing, kind of an up and to the right, that as a result of using the program in the moment that she was enjoying it and that it was contributing positively to her recovery. So those are both really cool to see.
Yeah. Okay. So 2008, you developed this at the age of 12, which still just blows my mind. 2009, you know, grandma's still working on it. So now kind of take me through the rest of the timeline, because the pandemic didn't hit until 2020. So, you know, we've got quite a few years between initial start and, you know, the getting it into the education world. So I know you talked about hospitals. So kind of talk about the rest of that timeline transition.
Absolutely. We knew we had about a year, perhaps less, to work with whatever level of memory recovery we could with my grandma at the time, until things kind of just settled and became kind of matter of fact what it could be. Right? There was a certain level of elasticity that we would be able to help her kind of improve or work on. And so that was like the window we were kind of targeting, where we realized, you know, unfortunately, this is the condition in which she's going to stay in, but let's see what we can do. Just to give you an idea of where she started, she was tubed, trached, and vented when she came out of the hospital. She couldn't do anything more than a head nod. Like that was her capability. And so she couldn't move her body. She couldn't say a word. And so she was really incapacitated. By the years to come before she unfortunately passed, she was able to, you know, share full sentences with us, communicate her needs to eat or go to the bathroom. She was able to respond to questions that were asked of her. We could put a phone to her head, and she'd be able to talk to her sister on the phone and be able to, you know, albeit very simply, have a basic conversation with her, which was huge because she just wasn't able to do that prior. And, you know, with some help, she'd be able to stand up and with a walker and with some support from aides, be able to walk around instead of be, you know, completely wheelchair bound. Like that right side was still very much paralyzed, but she was able to get a tiny bit of mobility back in her basic, you know, couple steps that she was able to take from place to place. So
wow.
It was overall, like the measure of progress was meaningful because it came from just such a really sad beginning. So it's all relative, of course. Every
right.
person is different, but that was her kind of her situation.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and you mentioned that when you started, you know, that it starts with a sad story. And that's definitely, you know, nobody wants to see a loved one go through what it sounds like your grandmother went through. And so, yeah. So where's the, okay. So we've gotten this help for grandma and we, you know, now we're maybe like 2010, 2011.
Yeah.
So now you're, what, a freshman in high school, approximately?
Yes. So come high school, we identified the potential to take this methodology and this technology of personalized cognitive therapy, take it beyond, you know, patient zero, my grandma, and say, hey, let's see how we can bring this to more people. We pursued the assistance of a patent attorney who at the beginning did not see what we saw and thought that it wasn't patentable and that there wouldn't have been any would not have been a potential to carry this through the way that we had hoped. But after some convincing, we got him to come on board. And that would be the start of a years long journey to file paperwork for a patent for it to later be granted for the process of collecting personalized data sets from family members, from clinicians, and more recently from teachers, and then do a baseline cognitive assessment of a person based on answers to standardized questions that have been published kind of on a scientific end. That's kind of outside the scope of what our software kind of delves into. We take questions that professionals ask already verbally and pen to paper of patients to determine the level of a cognitive deficit. But we determine that there's a process where that could be done digitally, where a software can then determine, hey, how poorly is this patient's prognosis in relation to their memory deficit? This is where they stand. And as a result, can we as a software suggest or make a determination as to if they follow this suggested care plan for cognitive therapy, will they improve in 6 weeks? Will they improve in 6 months? Will they improve in 1 year compared to, you know, a guess that might need to otherwise happen on pen and paper by a doctor based on maybe speculation or what they've seen of their, you know, limited patient set prior, as opposed to, you know, using a ton of data that a single program can capture from populations all over. So that's what we were pursuing on a patent end. That went on from 2010, I believe, all the way to 2016. So that fills a large portion of our timeline.
Yes, it does.
And that was a lot of back and forths with the USPTO, the Patent and Trademark Office of the United States government, where we had to basically nail down the specific pieces of our patent and say, this is what we are claiming. These were different claims in the paperwork that we're trying to claim ownership of for future uses. And this is by kind of taking the opposite of that. This is what we're not claiming. And then the patent examiners of the USPTO had to determine, okay, this is something called prior art, where another you know, patent or another organization kind of has ownership of this, or there's existing kind of scope that you can't also claim ownership of. That went back and forth for many years. And wow, it was kind of looking dismal in that it felt like we would never reach an amicable outcome, that we would be able to kind of say something relating to this invention finally is ours. But sure enough, in October of 2015, I woke up one morning when I was in college by this point, and I received a notice of allowance, is what it's called, from the USPTO. And that indicated to us that the final nailed down version of what Frenalytics represents has been granted by the USPTO. We had to pay an additional fee, and then we would wait for the paperwork to come into the mail, and then we'd say that a patent for our software has been granted. And the rest is history. Wow. Well, not that easy, but in terms of the patent.
Right. So before we get into, you know, a little bit more about what it does, where did the name Frenalytics come from?
Oh, that's an excellent question. So Fren is the Latinized form of the word mind, and analytics is the suffix of the word analytics. So we made a little bit of a word for ourselves, and Frenalytics by definition means analytics of the mind.
Cool. Okay. So now we've got the patent. Now we're able to, you know, start doing more with it. Keep going with the story.
Absolutely. So by this point, I am a sophomore in college, and I recognize that my parents will not let me drop out of college so soon simply because a patent has been granted. And so I need to finish my studies. But at the same time, we also need to define, where do we start with the software development of this company? I mean, the company so far owns a patent, and that's kind of it. That's a bit unorthodox and unconventional, right? So we had to establish what we wanted to build out first and what we wanted to focus on. And at the time, this is still well before COVID, and the concept of students and working in the world of special education wasn't crossing my mind for the purposes of this company. We were still focusing almost exclusively on elderly patients who have stroke, dementia, and TBI cognitive deficit diagnoses. And so over the next couple of years, what we did was we were writing out different scope definitions for what the MVP, or the minimum viable product, of our software should represent. We were working on additional trademarks for our name. The name Frenalytics actually came about a couple of years later. And we were entering pitch competitions on my campus where I was at school at the time. I'm actually visiting Boston College today. That's where I'm based up in Boston. And I graduated from school in 2018. My junior year here, we entered something called the Shea Venture Competition. It's a school-sponsored VC pitch competition where students are able to put together an application. If they are awarded or advanced to the next round, rather, they pitch in front of a small panel of judges. If they are then advanced to the final round, they get to pitch in front of a live audience. And the winners are awarded prize money and different sponsorship options. And we were named a finalist in that competition, which was really exciting, among a group of, I think, 45 or 50 different student organizations. We were in the top 10, which was super, super cool to see that there was early validation from industry experts, kind of giving some sort of indication that there's a need for this because we saw it ourselves, but it also is really important to know that there's external desire for a solution that fits other pain points as well.
Right. And so you keep referring to we. So is this still just your family or have you, I mean, I know you said you had, you know, a family friend at the early stages, but is that still basically the core of the group?
Yes. So since the inception of the company, including the patent, this we definition includes my father, who is our chief medical officer, as well as my family friend, Chris, who is our CTO, our chief technology officer. I've known Chris for more than half my life as well. So he's a longtime family friend. And then my mom, while she's not officially a co-founder of the company, she's been very, very involved over the years and super supportive in every aspect of the word. And she's involved quite heavily as well. So during this timeline of the college days, they were driving up to Boston. They were attending the pitch competitions in person, probably screaming the loudest. and were so supportive of everything that we were doing and continue to be supportive present day. But that was the definition of we back then. Our we of today is a little bit larger. We have a team of employees and part-time folks who are with us all around the US and also a few overseas. There's some interns too. But so our we has gotten a little bit bigger, but our core continues to remain, which is really sweet.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, and the idea from the very beginning is still there. You know, it's still like we started this for grandma and this is our family situation and we're going to continue this. So I love that aspect of it for sure. So we've been talking for quite some time and we still haven't really gotten into what exactly it does today. We've talked about its history. So bring us up to, you know, how it works for whether you're a person with dementia or whether you're a student in a school district or this can be done with individual family students as well. This doesn't have to be in a classroom setting, correct?
Absolutely. Okay. So the beauty, Shelley, of our software is that, you know, from the humble beginnings that we've just been talking about for quite a while to where we are now, a lot of the desire for the product and the outcome of the product has remained the same. So we have two different product lines now. We have our Frenalytics MED offering, which represents the suite of features and functionality for our folks who are diagnosed with stroke, dementia, and TBI. And then we have our Frenalytics EDU offering, which is designed for our students with learning disabilities, as well as the students and the families who support them. The underlying software more or less works very similarly, in some cases even works exactly the same, but the way that we configure it for each of our clients and for our different accounts varies based on the different use cases. But essentially, the way that our software works present day is once a patient or a student's profile gets configured, we have this module called the questionnaire, and that allows family members, that allows clinicians, that allows teachers, anyone who knows that person really well to input personalized information about their loved one or about the person they're caring for. And that can range all the way from likes and dislikes to areas of the house to things that are important to them from their upbringing, to important days and dates and life events and relationships, all the way through to other aspects of their life that would be important or relevant to reinforce through a software on a regular basis, like Frenalytics. That's where we really differentiate ourselves when we use the word personalization. We take it a step farther than all the other tools that are out there. And we don't mean that we're personalizing it to be for a patient or for a student, we are personalizing it to be literally about a single patient or a single student. And once all of that data gets entered, we turn it into what we call a learning session for them. And it gets automatically generated. You get to, as a teacher or as a clinician, turn on a switch on a dashboard for that patient or that student. And then they get to see questions that are contained within that section whenever it gets time for them to go ahead and run it. We show questions as multiple choice. So there's typically three answer choices, one right and two wrong answers. When a student or when a patient selects an option, they get immediate feedback as to whether the choice they chose is correct or not. And if they see that they chose the right answer, they get a nice job message. It lights up green. You can turn on a sound effect. It's a little over the top, but just like the original version, it's meant to be. It's meant to be fun, meant to be a game more than a test or a quiz. But what's happening behind the scenes is our software is measuring how long it took for that patient or for that student to answer the question correctly or incorrectly, how many times it's taking them to answer the question correct or incorrect. How often that question is being asked of them by their care team, whether that's teachers, clinicians, or family. Whether there are any images, movies, or audio files being shown alongside that question, perhaps as a visual aid, or maybe to come to some conclusion that showing media actually helps the person with their memory, or help the student be more engaged and answer questions more correctly or not. So all of this data that we're automatically collecting, we show for teachers and for clinicians on a what we call learning session dashboard, which is our built-in analytics engine. And it helps teachers on a learning side come to the conclusion of, hey, where are the specific areas that my student is showing progress in? Where might they be stagnating? And where are they actually regressing? And where do I need to give them some extra TLC and make sure that they focus some extra time either at home or in the classroom on? And where can I pull that data out for IEPs to make sure that they're meeting their goals, that data is communicated to the whole teaching team? And most importantly, how do we make sure that parents know where their child stands throughout the course of the year pre-IEP meeting?
Sorry, I have to interrupt that.
Yeah, no, please do. That's an important point.
Yes, because it is incredibly important for parents when they get their progress reports from the schools on their IEP goals that they get data associated with the summary that truly is the progress report. And so having that piece of data for the teachers to just be able to print out or send a link or whatever it is, that is tremendous. That is something that I have worked on for years now with schools, is getting them to understand that, hey, when you send that progress report home, that's just a summary of all the stuff that you've done for that quarter or that whatever time frame you've set before you're sending that out. But the parent wants to see and has the right to see all the times that they've attempted this skill and got it right and got it wrong. And, you know, because you may find patterns like you just mentioned. You know, sometimes media is better for things. Sometimes maybe it's not. And so having all of that information for teachers to give to the parents is spot perfect.
Your words have never been spoken, Shelly. You got that right. And one of the things that I think teachers and parents love the most about our software, not only the amount and quantity, but and also the quality of the data that we collect, but also the fact that parents can create accounts so they can see the same amount of information if the teacher wants to share it with them as the teacher themselves. So there's no kind of information asymmetry or guess as to how is my son or daughter doing in school. You say that they can identify all of their coins. I'm not seeing that at home. I don't believe it. There's a complete mismatch between what's happening during the daytime hours and the evening and weekend hours, what's going on. So it reduces all of those questions or that ambiguity or that he said, she said kind of mentality that can sometimes happen when there's some either a lack of data or there's an inconsistency in data or there's a parent who perhaps is only showing up for the IEP meetings and there's a telephone being played perhaps. And sometimes the right message isn't always getting across. That way, parents can see that same data, come to the conclusions they need to, be an active part in the IEP process for their students and really be the center of it, because they should be, just like the students. They don't need to be left behind or backseat. They're right in front as they should be.
That's awesome. And again, that falls right under the federal regulations that parents have a right to be equal members of the IEP team. Totally. And they have to have that same information so that they can meaningfully participate, which is another part of the law that says they're supposed to be able to meaningfully participate. I can't say that today. in the production of that IEP and in the conversations about their child's education. And so that's just beautiful. Now, when you were developing this, did you know that part about special education law when you were doing it for the education side? Or was that just like, hey, this is important and I know this is important, so we're going to make sure this happens?
I was familiar with the general realm of IEPs and students with special needs, but I was not familiar with the specifics of it and the sheer amount of work that goes into teachers not only producing and maintaining an IEP, but all of the logistics and the legal components that come with data collection, that come with the IEP meetings, that come with the compliance component, that come with the sometimes misaligned interests that parents and schools can have And I learned a lot about that as I went. And it turns out that the more we learned, not only the sadder it is, but the more we realized that our software can actually play a positive role in all of those conversations and contribute meaningfully, as you mentioned, to those positive contributions that one party can have to the other and vice versa. Because when everyone's on the same page, then this process works a whole lot better than when everyone's on different pages. And I think we see that play out in real life, unfortunately, far too often. But when things are kind of in equilibrium in the best cases of scenarios, then it's wonderful to see because it benefits the student and intern. The parents are in a good place. The teachers are in a good place. The school's in a good place. And everyone in between is kind of getting themselves taken care of as well.
And the student who the whole special education IEP document, individualized education program, for somebody who may not know, is all about.
Right.
And they're getting the benefit of not just your program, but the fact that their teachers and their parents are collaborating with one another. And there's not that tension that seems to be prevalent in our world today between families and schools. And that's something that I myself, as a master IEP coach, try to come in and help develop, is that understanding of, you know, why the parent wants what they want and why they're allowed to have what they're asking for. And then everybody feeling respected at the table and feeling heard, and that we're doing something that is truly appropriate for the person who many times isn't even at that meeting, the student and that it's being written for. So
right. The irony in that is a little too real sometimes. And it's always important to keep in mind who this whole process is for. And sometimes it's easy to get caught up in that and to unfortunately allow either a lack of data or, you know, an inconsistent quantity or quality of data to then, you know, yield an undesirable outcome. And that would just be so unfortunate if it continued to head in that direction. But I think that we're seeing with solutions like Frenalytics, and I think that there are a lot of other solutions that are coming out into this edtech world too, that it will no longer be this extremely tedious process for teachers if done right. And it won't be this extremely tension-driven process between parents and teachers or schools and parents that it sometimes has been kind of chalked up or labeled to be. And then it does return to the student being first, because that's what we're all in this for. And if you're not, then, you know, that there's a misalignment beyond what software can solve.
Right, right, exactly. And I love so much that you didn't have teachers in your family. You know, you talked about your parents and your grandparents and what they did, and you didn't mention teaching as a profession. And the fact that you understand and have taken into thoughtful consideration all of what's involved with teaching and all of what's involved with communicating with parents and getting that data out there. And, you know, like you said, the time and just all that's in, I mean, it's just, it's incredible. If you're in the world of teaching, what you have to go through in order to prove that you're doing what you're saying you're doing. And so having a software system like this, I'm a teacher. I mean, you can probably see the sign behind me. And so to be able to have something like this to bring not only to parents, but to the teachers as well, I'm very, very excited to be able to do that. And I know I'm going to share your website address right now, but I want you to continue to talk about how this works and what this new great thing that is offered to parents and teachers, or is it just teachers now, this free part of it?
So this new Frenalytics free program that we're so excited to offer is a teacher-specific plan, but we do have a new program that's available to parents too. So definitely check out our site for that. But the teacher-specific offering that we created this past school year for the 2022-2023 school year is called Frenalytics Free. It is as blatantly obvious as we can get, and that was totally intentional. It's to say that our Frenalytics EDU offering that's free for teachers lets you use it with your entire classroom. So whether you are a special education teacher and you're working in an advanced behavioral class and you have maybe only a small handful of students with a bunch of aides, or you're working in a class with maybe 10 or 12 students, or if you're in an inclusion classroom where some of your students are in IEPs or 504 plans and your other students are in a gen ed population, no matter what it might be, If you hit that learn more button and then you go into the Frenalytics EDU side, you can see everything that comes with our Frenalytics free offering. Yeah, that link all the way at the top. Exactly. That's where we have the bulk of our Frenalytics EDU features and functionality that's available for our teachers as we released over the summer. And we're coming up with new stuff all the time. We have a whole suite of integrated content that we develop with our in-house team of special education teachers who are fantastic. Some of the features that we like to show off on the website involve life skills, because that's where we started. That goes back to our roots. We did a pilot out in Escondido, California, with a moderate to severe life skills special ed classroom. And we realized that's where our software just most resonated with them, because they were able to reinforce telling time skills. They were able to reinforce safety signs, how to properly wear your mask at the peak of the pandemic and keep 6 feet apart from other students, how to practice proper table manners when you're eating, all the way through academic skills like counting, identifying coins, identifying dollar bills, reading comprehension, and everything in between. So our software has since grown from there. We now have a whole range of different ELA, math, and life skills-based lessons. We're really excited soon to announce also an integration with a software called Vonic, where we'll have a full suite of Common Core aligned math lessons from grades 3 through 8. And we'll be developing content for the early grades and the high school grades shortly after that. But as you can see, there's a whole lot here that's perfect for the world of education and special education. And it started this past summer, and we're on a rocket ship, so to speak, and it's only going up. So I'm really excited to be able to show this off to teachers. And our free plan is exactly that. It's free. And there's so much that can be lifted off of your really full plate when it comes to data collection and when it comes to creating age-appropriate lessons for your students, because we get it. It's, you know, your students can be academically across all different grade levels. And Shelly, I'm sure you've seen this in your time across different grades too. And it's just so hard to keep up. And I think that we can play a small part in helping that feel a little less overwhelming and a little less burdensome.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just speaking to someone yesterday about the fact that I'm in Illinois, and in my teaching experiences, I've had multiple grades for every year that I've taught, except for one. But even if I had, even the year that I had the one grade level that students were assigned to, they still were in varying different levels of ability. Some were above, some were below, some were on. And yeah, coming up with those lesson plans for each individual one, you know, I had 20 students. I had 20 lesson plans for math. I had 20 lesson plans for reading. And, you know, having something like this that would collect that data for me would have been incredible and such a time saver. And so I'm really excited to share this with not just my audience here, but with I sent out a letter to my email followers and said, hey, you know, this is happening today. If you can tune in, tune in. If not, catch the replay of it, because I think this is going to be something amazing for teachers across the board. And so I'm just overwhelmed and excited with everything that you have to offer with this. So I do, even though, you know, my audience are educators and parents of children, I do want to talk a little bit about the medical side of it. And now I have to figure out how to get back.
Oh yeah. If you hit our logo in the top left, that'll bring you right back to the homepage.
Whoops. I hit my back button instead. So I apologize. I couldn't do what you said.
There you go. If you hover over solutions and then you can hit for facilities, that'll give you a little bit of a background as to how our software works on the medical side.
Okay. So yeah, I see you've got a little bit different types of pictures and.
Yeah. If you scroll down, you'll get a bit of an idea as to what the setup is like and some of the features as well. So you can also even hover over the features menu at the top and then click on learning session dashboard. This will be applicable actually to both the medical side as well as the school side, because it shows the analytics that comes out of our software. But I'll speak about it in the medical capacity first, since that's just what you asked about. And then I'll kind of draw some comparisons to how we set it up for schools as well. Patients are even more complex and unique than students, because the varying stages of their diagnoses can make it really difficult at times for care providers to understand what exact like paths or plans they need to follow in order to try and get either back to baseline or try and maximize whatever outcomes or goals that have been set for them. So similar to a special education plan, a speech language pathologist, for example, might set a goal for a patient to understand the multi-step processes involved to, you know, make a cup of coffee or to get changed in the morning or to get themselves to the grocery store or to be able to pay a checkout. And interestingly enough, depending on, you know, your role as a teacher in the classroom or your involvement as a parent, those goals might sound really similar to what you're trying to set for your son or your daughter or for your student. Right. And so in those regards, we call those activities of daily living on a medical side, and those will be charted in a patient's set of documentation. And Frenalytics can be used to say, hey, which step is followed first in this process of making a grilled cheese? What step is followed second in this process of making a grilled cheese? What's third? What's fourth? What's fifth? And then making sure that they can, through and through, consistently identify and document the process that one would follow in order to get to that overall outcome to make sure that that activity of daily living is achieved. And then when a speech language pathologist, for example, would come through here and see, okay, this ADL was assigned to this patient. They've done it three times. Let's see how well they're doing. We'd be able to, if you scroll down, Shelley, on this screen, you'd be able to identify on a per section basis. This one has favorites and family, for example. You'd be able to see, you know, instead of family, it would say, you know, grilled cheese ADL, for example. You'd be able to see, okay, are they always getting step one right? Are they always getting step two right, three, four, and five? Or is there, are they a little bit shaky in this ADL? Are they a little bit shaky in this ability to complete whatever multi-step process it might be? So similar on a special education side, if you are trying to assign a goal for a student of identifying their coins, for example, and you wanted to see what that growth looked like on a curve all the way in that image to the right, you'd be able to see, okay, this student seems to be doing consistently well on the section that this screenshot is taking a photo of. Maybe this is money or maybe this is counting, but perhaps their safety signs, they're not doing so hot. So it might be worth enforcing or reinforcing the skills for some of those safety signs that they're not getting consistently right, or maybe doing all of the safety signs so that it doesn't feel like they're always struggling for every question, that you're giving them some motivation or positive reinforcement that, oh, they've got these easy ones, it's in the bag, but let's also keep it challenging and make sure that there are certain questions that are kind of a step above that they need to reach for. This screenshot over here as well is showing you how it's customizable per student. So there's a set of switches. I know the screenshot's a tiny bit small, but it may give you an idea as to how you can turn some of our content on and off, depending on not only the student or the patient that you're focusing on, but what skills you're trying to reinforce that particular day. So if it's a school side, maybe you want to turn on sight words and staying healthy or favorites. And then perhaps if we're talking about a dementia patient, their favorites might be interesting to them. And you'd want to focus on maybe family and identification instead, because that long-term memory might be a little bit unstable, but while they still have it, let's make sure that we can enforce that. And for short-term memory, let's make sure that we can try and continue to practice those skills to hold on to that for as long as we can.
So within each of these, because you had said earlier that this is customized, is individualized for the person. So for example, if I clicked on this one that says sight words and I'm a teacher, would I be able to upload my own set of sight words that this particular student is working on? Or is there a set that is already in there that we would have to draw from?
So it's a little bit of both. We, on our side, our special education team creates all of these sections with content that aligns with Common Core. And then when it comes to life skills, we align with different life skills standards. And so for sight words, for example, you'll see a photo of a car, of a boat, of a dog, of a cat, of the typical sight words that you may want students to be reminded of, simply by flipping that switch from off to on. There's no further configuration that you need to do in order for those questions to be shown to that student. You can, if you wanted to as a teacher, turn on and turn off specific sight words based on either their progress or maybe a certain sight word isn't applicable to them or is above or below grade level. And so you don't want to enforce that because it's not relevant. if you wanted to make your own, we do have that capability of as well. We call it our custom sections and our custom questions. You don't have to, but you can. You have the ability to make anything that you want, and you can customize it per student, or you can copy it over and have it available to everyone in your class. It's really up to you.
Okay. Yeah. Because I wanted to know just because I wanted to know, but I remember when I taught some students who were cognitively delayed more so than some of my other students, if I could give them pictures of, as you did with your grandmother, pictures of their own individual family,
totally,
the interest was higher and something in the brain just clicked and they seemed to learn the names and the words associated with that specific person more so than a generic picture, like you mentioned before. So that's a possibility that you can go in and do that with like the family section or favorites.
100%. So some of these sections get treated differently than others. Our favorites, our family, our identification, and a few other sections that aren't in this screenshot specifically call for family, teacher, and clinician involvement in order to get that personalized data in order to show it. We won't ever show a random stick figure or a generic image of a house and say, you know, which of these is your front door, because that's not helping anybody. So right. Those questions draw from the data sets that are generated by the family uploading photos of the kitchen, of their bed, of, you know, their pet dog, or of their husband, you know, whoever it might be. Right. Once they get put into those relevant sections, then all you do is flip the switch and we'll show the questions accordingly. What we will do as a software is we'll auto-generate wrong answers so that if you put a photo of somebody's husband, wife, spouse, whoever it might be, then we'll also show alongside the right answer two wrong answers, and it'll be consistent. So it'll say, you know, which of these is your friend? You'll see a photo of Shelly. You'll see a photo, you know, of Albert. You'll see a photo of Nick. And then you'll get to choose the right answer. And, you know, Albert and Nick will have photos that just pop up alongside Shelly's.
Gotcha. Understood. That's incredible. And I know I've said this probably a dozen times already, but this truly is an amazing program. And I love it. I'm going to stop sharing now, but I do want to mention, because this will become a podcast eventually, so I do want to spell out the your website. It's www.frenalytics, and that's frenalytics.com. This is absolutely remarkable and amazing and all kinds of other adjectives that I just, you know, are not coming to me at the moment, but I'm so impressed and so thankful for you, Matt, and your whole program. And I'm looking forward to, I haven't yet because I didn't want to know things. I wanted to experience it brand new as we were going through it today. But I plan on going in and setting up my own free account and really getting in and playing with it. I'm not in a classroom full time anymore. So is that okay? I do tutoring instead.
Of course. Please do.
Okay. And that was the other thing, is I wanted to make sure that that was okay. I can just see the potential and the doors opening for so many people. From students all the way to upper aged adults. And it's such an exciting thing. And I'm sure that, you know, your grandmother is just super, super proud of you and amazed. And I'm sure you wish she could see how advanced version one has gotten to this day. But I just, it's so cool. I'm just in awe, Matt. I really am. I want to thank you for joining me today. And I just want to give you one last chance to, if there's anything else that you wanted to say before we wrap up.
Thank you, Shelly. You're making my day. I really appreciate the kind words. And I think she really is looking down on us. I think this is her way of her legacy living on. And I think she'd be really proud of it. So thanks for giving us a platform to be able to share it. And I really do hope that it helps all of the teachers, the students, the parents, and all the other folks who we think that we designed this program for, in the same way that it helped not only my grandma years ago, but all of the hundreds of teachers and clinicians that have signed up for our program since. So we're really excited to be able to share this with people. And I hope that it gives as positive an impact as you and I both hope it will. So thanks again for having me.
I think it definitely will. Thanks, everybody. Don't forget to tune in next week. Bye-bye.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.